Did you know that the Gardener's Workshop offers cut flower seeds? Our hand-picked selection includes only the varieties we grow in our own fields and gardens, and each pack is printed with our exclusive growing tips and insights. So visit us at thegardenersworkshop.com today. The Gardener's Workshop, turning all thumbs green.
Hey friends, welcome back to another Field and Garden podcast. It is your friend in flowers and more, as you'll learn today, Lisa Mason Ziegler, and I am joined here today with longtime friend and team member Rhonda Graves. Hey Rhonda.
Hey Lisa.
And so we're actually sitting together recording this, which this doesn't normally happen, so it'll be a lot of fun. Rhonda and I are both experienced bug huggers, and that means that we have embraced how significantly important insects are and how much they help us. Although, unfortunately, people tend to focus in on the few that cause a problem, but there's so many other great ones. So Rhonda, it's great to have you here. I think we've done several bug talks.
Yes, we have.
And today's a bigger picture than the bug talk. We're going to talk today about kind of restoring nature. I allude to that often in my talks about how since I restored the natural order here on my farm, that allowed me to really walk away from using pesticides with confidence. It's not quick, but with confidence. And Rhonda's done the very same thing. She has a yard and a garden and a home, and I've done it a little bit bigger. So we thought we'd talk today about those important things, why it's important, what we're talking about, and then just some resources and how do you do it? What do you think?
Well, they're just so fun to look at, too. They're interesting to watch.
It's
and
true.
If you stop, go out every morning, look in your garden, see what's moving around,
and
just see what they're doing and see if they're helping you. Or maybe they are hurting you, but are they doing so much damage that you have to like pull out the big guns and,
right.
and take care of everyone that's out there, even the innocent guys?
True. And isn't it true that there's probably, if you give them time, somebody's going to come along and get him?
Right. Like one of those assassin bugs.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Real
yeah.
bugs.
Oh, my gosh. You know, it's so funny that one of our other good friends who also helps us from time to time, Susan Ackerman, will often report. She's often the worship leader at church, and she'll say, Robbie and I go out with our coffee on mornings that it's pleasant. And she said, like 2 hours later, we come out of the garden because they're just kind of inventorying all the creatures that they embrace out there. And I mean, friends, I just can't even tell you, if you love gardening or you love farming, there's a whole deeper level, right?
Yeah, it's a whole world for sure. And they all have a part in it. And I think, as you said, they're only like 2% of the insects that are out there, which there are a whole lot more of them than there are of us. Only 2% of them are actually considered pests and do monetary damage or health
right.
damage, things like that. So
I think a lot of insects fall victim to being an inconvenience. They're in the wrong place at the wrong time, you know? And once you explore and understand just how beneficial insects are, you know, as I mentioned that here on our farm, we don't use pesticides anymore. I haven't for, gosh, I used to say over a decade. I'm sure it's probably coming close to 2 decades now. Not even organic stuff, typically, because we don't find that we need to. And for me in the big picture, and I'll just talk a little bit about doing it here on my farm, it's not just walking away from the trigger, which means the spray bottle, y'all, you know, just making a pact with yourself and say for 2 years, I'm just not going to do it. And no, your insects, your pests, the things that you think are pests, don't just magically disappear. But with time and following just some general ground rules, and for me, that would be here on our flower farm, there's just certain flowers that are bug magnets, pest magnets, mm-hmm. that we just don't grow anymore. Like Shasta daisies, mm-hmm. gladiolas. Those are two flowers that here in my region, the mid-Atlantic of the United States, attract thrips. I just could never get a control on thrips while I grew those flowers. We eliminated those flowers, and within 2 years, we still have a low grade thrip presence, but it's not an issue, you know?
Right.
So it's not just stopping using pesticides. You look at your practices and some of the stuff you're growing. You know, if you have a pesky, if you have a plant that is really pesty and you can't bear it, because I know that you're probably already thinking, but you know, there's nothing wrong with aphids on butterfly weed, right?
Right. Well, one good thing about aphids on butterfly weed or anything is that they're just a luncheon for
exactly
like the lady beetles and all those other syrphid flies, all the things that eat them. Hey, that's how you attract them in your garden, is to actually have a little bit of pest so that there's food there for them to come. And there's nectar. And that's one thing I think really makes a difference on your farm, is that you have blooms so long during the year. I mean, they have no reason to leave because it's good here.
And, you know, that's kind of what spurred the book, Vegetables Love Flowers. That book, y'all, is not about vegetables. It's about how significant the presence of flowers in a vegetable patch can be and how to do that. And we did it with a cutting garden. So that's a really good point, Rhonda, that we roll out the red carpet. And I also think that one of the reasons that we have such a, I mean, my goodness, you could go out in this garden and stay out there all day and just never even capture looking at half of what's going on out there. But I feel like because we grow so many cool season hardy annuals, which are cool flowers, which bloom early in the season, like right now, this is late March, we're recording this. There's calendula out there already blooming. There's Cerinthy already out there blooming. And there's Sweet William just starting, one of the varieties. And you think about what else is blooming in the world. There are, we have a lot of dandelions around here. We love dandelion.
Henbit.
And henbit, But having flowers early in the season attracts these good creatures. And they say, you know, let's go over there. Well, then we just feed them constantly through all these flowers and they never want to leave because it's really dangerous for them to leave.
And another, thinking about the early nectar and there, because there are, I know I always talk to you about parasitic wasps.
I love them.
But so, they're also teeny tiny. A lot, most of them are teeny tiny, like the one that parasitizes the tobacco horn.
Right.
You probably wouldn't even notice it being around, but it's those little wasps and little flies that parasitize some of those pests that those nectar plants really attract.
So we're talking about, so those are like not the wasps that people are so terrified of, which after we get through with you today, you aren't going to be so terrified of them. But this is a different family of wasps, right? Those little teeny ones. But friends, what we really want you to take away from listening to us chat about what we love to talk about and how we have restored the natural order on in our homes and gardens and on this farm, is that the whole system is made pretty perfectly to work together. It's when we interfere or have interfered that breaks that chain, which brings me to my first book suggestion. First off, I think it's easy, I believe, for people to get overwhelmed when they start learning about this because there are so many great resources.
That's true.
You have to really just, and if I had to only recommend one book, all right, think about what yours would be. My one book would be Bringing Nature Home by Doug Tallamy. If you, anybody that just even owns a home should have this book. This book, I guess, when was this book published?
I think I saw 2007.
I was going to say, I read this book about 10 years ago for the first time, and it literally is what started my journey of really changing the way that I farm and think about, not in my cutting garden, but everything else around it and some of the practices. But this is a really great book for the home gardener right up to the grower. The basics of, because I think of it as a chain. There's this chain of every chain, every link in the chain is super important at one point in time. And when there's missing links, and there are a lot of missing links now, y'all. I mean, I just can't believe we're still surviving, frankly. When you start learning about how amazing the system nature is and what it does for you, And you see how we've just eliminated so much of it out of fear and inconvenience and ignorance. I know that was my
greed
and greed. Yeah. All of those things. Just really. So that would be my pick, Bringing Nature Home by Doug Tallamy. And we'll have a show in the show notes below. We'll give a link to that. So if somebody had to start with one, what would you recommend?
I do like Mary Gardner's Good Garden Bugs, Everything You Need to Know About Beneficial Predatory Insects.
Ooh.
So that's like, you know, that you don't think of a lady beetle being a predatory insect, but
she
that's,
is.
she is. As an adult and as a larvae too.
Yeah.
So, but there's so many other ones out there. You know, spiders, I know everybody
oh
freaks
my
out.
gosh, I love spiders now.
Yeah. So spiders and manids, you know, the big ones, you know, but there's so many little ones that just do such an important job with pests.
And, you know, let's just talk about some of those scary ones. So wasps and spiders are two that are some of the most I have now learned and have such respect and I'm so pleased to have them guests on my farm are wasps and spiders. They're some of the most ferocious eaters of bad bugs. And so two just great examples of that. One is, you know, when I was tilling the garden, when you till a garden on a big, on a tractor, you go really slow. And that, because I have a small tractor, I'm often tilling between two beds on either side that are still producing. And I happen to be tilling, there's a bed of tomatoes, a whole, you know, 100-foot row of tomatoes. This was several years ago. And you're going really slow. And I'm watching this wasp. I couldn't see from a distance yet what he had, but he was hopping, literally flying from tomato cage post to post. And when I got closer, I could see what he was doing. He had a tobacco hornworm, which is that big worm that gets on your tomatoes, y'all, that big green guy that eats your plants quickly. That wasp was carrying that hornworm, and it was so heavy, he was having to literally touch down.
Oh, that's great.
He couldn't make it back, and the worm was dead. He had was stunned, I guess. He had stung the worm and was carrying it back to his hole to stuff it in, is what I understand, for his babies.
Or her babies.
Her babies. Yes, that's right. Her babies.
The she's are probably the ones that are doing most of the work. I don't know. Well, anyway, in the bees and wasp family, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really true. And so after I investigated and then I learned, wasps are meat eaters. They eat other insects primarily. And that, why would I not want them in my garden to eat other insects? They eat so many caterpillars. They take care of the larva of the moth that gets on all of our buds out here on the sunflowers. So I have a new respect. So I cohabitate with wasps now. We just watch out for each other, and they do a lot of hard work around here.
Right.
And spiders are pretty important too, aren't they?
Oh yeah, they eat a lot of insects. So, and I do have them in the house occasionally. But
yeah, me too.
Yeah, I have my bug containment system. So,
oh my gosh, y'all, tell us about. We have a bug containment system at the Gardener's Workshop warehouse. Tell them what that is, Rhonda.
It's basically two small clear plastic cups marked bug TGW containments, bug containment center system. And we just can pick up an insect, whatever. It's usually the beetles running through the warehouse, or a cricket or a spider. They always yell. And so I go get it and we relocate it outside. So
yeah. Born free.
That's right. That's right.
And, you know, so when you start to understand that every insect plays a role, they're either there to be eaten or they're the eater of somebody, right? Wow, that is pretty dadgum significant. So let's just talk about, what are some of the things you've done in your yard to help restore the natural order? I know you plant a lot of native stuff, right?
Yeah, native plants. And there are a lot of the bees, especially, that are, you know, honeybees are generalists. They will take nectar anywhere, but there are a lot of bees that specialize on a certain plant. And if that certain plant can't be found, it's kind of like monarchs and milkweed, it's their chance of survival is, you know, is lessened.
Right.
So, and there's some bees that are only out for, you know, a couple weeks at a time. They get their job done and then they die off and their babies are born the next spring. So, but yeah, planting more, blooming, you know, more flowers, not using any chemicals. Yeah, the natives are a big part of that.
And, you know, you said not using chemicals. I mean, because we know that organic products do harm beneficial insects, mm-hmm. right? I mean, if it kills anybody, there's it's potential to harm them. And so we just have really learned and proven that you really don't have to use chemicals.
Right.
You know, I mean, again, by crop selection. I mean, you know, if you've got a plant on your in your garden that is just a problem, you just don't know what to do, you need to dig it up and throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, yeah. Why, there are way too many strong growers, right?
Exactly.
That just really don't need all that attention. And so, Rhonda, explain how native plants kind of support native insects, how that whole, and birds, and how that whole cycle works. Because I think people mm-hmm. think like I did, oh, native, that means they grow better here and I might not have to water them as much, but it is much deeper than
oh,
that.
Oh, definitely. But that is true.
Yeah.
So
yes.
Plants that have evolved here and then those insects that have co-evolved there. So if you go to the store and pick a plant that's, you know, bug resistant or something like that, it might be something that actually came from the Far East and its predators or its, you know, pests are not here in this country. So there, you know, there are no bugs to eat it because
right.
the native bugs are eating the plants that they've been eating for millennia.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of those ornamental plants that are just, you know, they're real showy or whatever, they come from different parts of the world. And we just don't have those pests here.
Yeah.
Now there's yet exactly. I mean, there's certainly insects and plants that get introduced here on purpose or by accident. In the case of a lot of the insects, well, actually, some of those might have been introduced purposely too. But they get introduced here and sometimes they can become a big problem. So like Japanese beetles.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So they've gotten to be quite a problem. And they don't have predators because they're not native. So their predators are still somewhere else. So.
But when you grow native plants, that attracts native insects. And then that also attracts and provides food for our native birds, right?
Correct. Yeah. And we've lost a lot of songbirds. And that's one thing that Doug Tallamy was really into. He's an entomologist in Delaware. And that was his study, just to look at that relationship between the insects and the native plants, what you would find on a plant that had been here for, you know, a native plant versus one that's a non-native that doesn't have any pests at all. But another thing about those, when you think about like a butterfly weed or something like that, monarch butterflies, they're going to lay their eggs on that plant because that's their host plant. Their babies are going to eat that plant. Well, most people love monarchs and think that's great. Let's, you know, it's okay for them to eat that particular plant, but there are lots of other insects that their host plant is something else that you might not really want them to eat, but it is
part of nature.
It's part of nature. And if you find out more about it, it might be something that, oh, that's a beautiful butterfly or a beautiful moth that eats. And do they really eat that much?
Right.
That's another thing is having diversity.
Right.
You have a lot of diversity here. So, you know, places that have just crepe myrtles or just azaleas or whatever, right. When a pest comes in,
it wipes you out.
Yeah. So,
and you know, that's so true. It's like there are so many other insects that do that same cycle mm-hmm. kind of as monarchs do that people get so, but they aren't as showy as
right.
a monarch.
Mm-hmm.
That's again, that's like the headliner insect mm-hmm. for so many others. Because there are some super cool moths.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And people squash those caterpillars without thinking twice. And that's, I mean, it's okay But you have to leave some, you know, you have
And it's bird, it's bird food,
it's
caterpillar.
bird food.
And yeah, Talamy says that too, is that a caterpillar is like the best protein you can feed your baby. It's
Exactly.
soft, it's squishy, it'll go down their little throats really fast, and it feeds them.
That is pretty dadgone good. I just love Doug Tallamy.
Great.
You know, I mean, it was like a aha moment. I just never understood that the reason that we should, and what I took away from his book, Bringing Nature Home, one of the things is the three most important plants that I could plant here on my farm to make the biggest impact were oak trees, southern wax myrtles, and Virginia creeper. I already had a ton of Virginia creeper.
Virginia creeper, that's one. It's got, oh gosh, what's the name? It's one of the, it's got a beautiful moth that feeds on it.
Oh,
That gets
wow.
host plant.
And Japanese beetles feed on it
Oh,
too,
really?
big time. Oh,
Well,
yeah.
that's better that they eat on that than
Yeah.
something
Yep.
else, right?
It's true, but it was like, so for me, just to tell you how I applied this theory or the truth about restoring nature, about how you can really do it, is you don't have to say, all right, I'm cutting down my whole yard. It's when you go to add a new plant, a tree or a shrub, or you're going to renovate a little bed or something, consider bringing natives in. Because when you bring in native plants, that brings in native insects, and those native insects are the food for our native birds. And you know, I grew up in a bird home. The Mitchells lived down the street from us. They wrote books about birds and stuff. I just found one when I was just going through when we're as we're moving
Reading
stuff
books.
around, yeah, and the books. And you know, we don't see Baltimore Orioles here. I don't see them hardly at all. They were at my mother's feeder every morning
Wow.
for toast with jelly. I was there too. But you know, it's and I think back, I mean, we had a real diverse landscape, you know. Wasn't very big though. But I think people just don't get it. I didn't get it. I was a farmer for 10 years and didn't really get it. And then it trickles down, you know, to frogs and turtles. And I mean, it's so deep, y'all.
Snakes.
Oh, yeah.
I just saw
Joey,
that.
that's what we call.
I'm not a huge snake fan. I'm not a snake fan at all, but I know how important they are. And I just saw on a, neighborhood post, it's like, how do I keep snakes away? So it was all, it's like this, that, the other thing. And somebody says, just let them be. They'll go away when the food source is gone. And who really wants mice running around?
Exactly.
Or
Exactly.
moles. Everybody wants to know how to get rid of moles and voles.
Encourage snakes. And so that's great. So here's how we handle the snakes here on our farm, because I'm not really a snake fan either. However, snakes cured our major vole problem a decade ago. And we have a couple black snakes that are here on the farm, and we tend to make rock piles. I'm just thinking there's two here on the farm. Those are like safe havens for reptiles. And so nobody wants to be startled by a snake, right? So we've named all of our snakes are named Joey, because Joey's a sweet boy that we knew. And it's a cute name. So instead of screaming, you just scream Joey, and it kind of calms you down. And it has helped us get over our snake fears. Because it, I mean, what's one of the most number one things this time of the year people are complaining about? Voles. We
Oh,
have,
yeah.
and let me tell you don't want any more voles. Encourage a couple of snakes to hang out. They don't want to bite you. They want, you know, rodents, and that's what we want them to actually have. So yeah, snakes are pretty amazing. And then how about, so we're talking about nature at levels, right? We're talking about these ground insects and then planting some native stuff. And then the birds that come to those native plants, these songbirds, eat a boatload of insects when they've got babies,
Oh,
right?
right. I can't remember how many. It's like thousands from the time that they're hatched to the time they leave the nest.
Thousands. Did y'all
Thousands.
hear that? And so if they're living in your garden, I mean, I've read something about chickadees, you know, 2 or 3,000 insects they collect to feed their little clutch of those little teeny babies. And I mean, those are, you know, caterpillars, aphids, all that stuff, all of that stuff. And so it's like when you step back and start learning. So if you read Doug's book, Bringing Nature Home, and he has several books, I would say this Bringing Nature Home is the base book, because he lists plants in there by region here in the United States. It will really just open your eyes to what is actually going on out there.
And he now has an organization. Apparently, he started it with somebody who was inspired by his talk, heard him speak, and I think she's in marketing. And she's like, you know, we got to do something. We've got to make a difference and get people interested in changing their yard. So their organization is called HomegrownNationalPark.org. And if you go there, you can actually go to your region and look up the plants, those keystone plants that, you know,
that
start with
awesome.
That start with that one plant, you know, and the next time you go to the nursery. And that's another thing, thinking about nurseries, you know, for a while, it'd be real hard to find anything at a nursery. So look for
native plants.
Yeah. You can go find English ivy, which is not a real good choice.
Or Japanese maples,
yes,
which aren't native at all.
Right.
Key is in the name, y'all.
So finding those nurseries that are now, there are a lot more of them because there has been more demand. So it is becoming more available through nurseries and then a lot of the master gardener groups when they have plant sales. This time of year, it's starting now. I mean, end of April, 1st of May, you probably can't go very far without hitting a master gardener sale or native plant society. So,
and then places like, I know here for us, we have a place called the Virginia Living Museum, which is an amazing place, but they have like a native plant nursery and have a big sale. And so there are definitely, you just have to seek them out. They aren't in big brick and mortar stores often. Sometimes, but the smart brick and mortar nurseries are definitely adding native plants.
And there are a lot of states too that I know North Carolina had changed their law so that all the right-of-ways, I don't know if it's still that way or not, but they made it so that all the right-of-ways would have native, you know, highways would have native plants in planting. So their Department of Transportation. And so they had a demand there, which helped all the people that are looking for plants.
Exactly.
So it is happening. So,
and you know, as a retailer, I understand it's hard to sell natives when nobody knew what they didn't know what they were, why they were beneficial. So it's a slow roll. It takes decades for all of that to change. And it's been going on now for several decades, right?
Right.
So, so that is just pretty dadgum awesome. But, I just want to say that one of the books that I read years ago called Grow Organic, I'm not even sure if it's in print anymore, by Doug Oster and Jessica Walliser. And it said in there, all right, if you decide you want to give up drugs, it's going to take 2 years. So this is not a quick turn. You know, if you say I'm going to give up using chemical products today and then implement some of these other things and something we haven't even touched on. I mean, we could talk for days about this. Another part of this is not only in your plant selection, natives being, you know, top dog, but is the growing conditions, planting the right plant in the right conditions, you know, planting a sun lover in the shade, that plant is going to struggle. And when a plant struggles or is stressed, guess what, friends? They send up a red flag to the pests and disease that says, come and get me. And it's true. I mean, we know it is true. So growing healthier plants is another piece of all these pieces we're talking about, you know?
So now you want me to talk about soil because that's my next favorite thing in the world.
There you go. So
and you never see those guys.
Oh,
barely.
My gosh.
There's so much going on in the soil and so many beneficial things that are
billions
in a teaspoon.
I mean, did you hear what she just said? Billions in a teaspoon.
Yeah. Microbes in healthy soil.
In healthy soil. And, you know, ever since they wrote this in Teeming for Microbes, it's liberated me to say it without, you know, too much fallout. is that using synthetic fertilizers, that's anything pelleted and blue, y'all. And whenever you use a synthetic fertilizer on your lawn or in your garden, all those microbes are at risk because of the sodium that's in the fertilizer. Has anybody ever put salt on a slug? Like when you were a kid or maybe with your grandkids, that's what the sodium in synthetic fertilizers does to these billions of little creatures living in our soil. It damages or kills them, which in fact turns around and makes those plants 100% dependent on you to provide all the care that those microbes were given to your plant roots. The roots is where it's at.
Right. And all that organic material that's in there that helps keep water close by. So you don't have runoff, you don't have erosion. You don't have to water every day. That's one thing with your, I mean, how often do you turn
Not
your,
ever.
Yeah.
Hardly ever. Yeah. I mean, we just don't have to irrigate. And, you know, we put irrigation down when we make our beds.
Just in
case. You can ask Bobo. We haven't installed a header. And so we get frequent rain here in southeastern Virginia.
We are lucky in that.
We get about 50 inches a year. But because our soil is just so incredible because of caring for it properly and feeding it, not with fertilizer necessarily. We rarely have to irrigate. And that's a result of Steve's grandparents leaf molding and composting this land, you know? So it's all these little components pulled together. So get bringing nature home and get.
I like Jessica's too, attracting beneficial bugs to your garden. A natural approach to pest control. That's a good one.
That is a really, really good one. Jessica, interesting story, was a horticulturist on drugs, which we call chemicals, drugs.
Getting paid to drug other people's yards.
Exactly, exactly. Getting paid. That's right. She was a dealer. And then she, I forget actually what her story was. We actually did a podcast with her. And we will put a link to that podcast in the show notes. Jessie will. She saw the light and is now this amazing, she's written multiple books now on beneficial.
Good bug, bad bug.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That was the first one. And she wrote, was the co-author of Grow Organic. Mm-hmm. Friends, you just have to, once you get in, you'll be like Bronda and I, where you like become a member of the bug hugging society, which is what we are.
Yeah.
We're the king and queen. And, you know, I mean, it just makes it more enjoyable, grows a healthier, and it's better for the environment, the future, and everything involved.
And it's highly entertaining.
And it's very fun. It is very, very fun.
I would say there are a couple, not that I don't want everybody to go out and buy books, but there are also a lot of online resources like homegrownnationalpark.org. But the Xerces Society that's been around for years, they started as a butterfly to save the butterfly, because the Xerces butterfly was wiped out when they built the Presidio in San Francisco.
Yeah.
It's extinct now. And they started off trying to preserve butterflies, but now it's all invertebrates. So they've got lots of great information. A lot of, one book is Farming with Native Beneficial Insects and Attracting, the one I have is Attracting Native Pollinators. So they do a lot of stuff for not just home gardeners, but for farmers.
Right.
And then the other one is sustainable, and all these will be in the notes, sustainable agricultural research and education. They put out a lot of information, and their website is SARE, so SARE.org. And they have a lot of
resources. They have
just following them on Facebook is, you know, great articles come up and you see new things all the time.
So. Facebook is far funner when you follow the right people, y'all.
Exactly.
Isn't that the truth?
It's true.
I mean, people complain about certain things. I'm like, just ignore that stuff because there is so much good stuff.
Mm-hmm. I just go block.
Yep, exactly.
And then
exactly.
Find another one that's more fun. Like,
I mean, there's a lot of great groups. And so you can really restore your natural order, whether you live in how big would you say your backyard is?
25 by 80.
25 by 80.
The double lot.
Yeah. You know, I mean, Doesn't matter how small your spot. If you've got a spot you can plant something in, you can make a difference. And so we hope this has opened your eyes. That's what our job really feels, because there are so many resources out there, and we're just using them all. You know, we're just, Ron and I both have a little book problem. We love books as much as we love bugs, just about. But it is awesome to be able to sit down and grab a book and look something up, and it just, you fall in.
That, I mean, that's a good point. But to have a book, though, one that shows you bugs, all the insects, so you can kind of start to see, like, oh, that's an assassin bug, or oh, that's a stink bug. So not all stink bugs are bad.
Exactly.
There are some predatory stink bugs. So having a basic book like that, that kind of gets you familiar with their body shape, their behavior, what they do,
right,
what some of the characteristics are. And iNaturalist is a great app.
Phone app, yeah.
Phone app. So you can take a picture. If it doesn't help you identify it there, you can just upload it and somebody else will help you identify it. And then I like the bird one. If you haven't checked out Merlin yet.
The bird songs?
You can just, it listens to them.
Yeah.
So you just hold it up and that's like, oh, it's a Baltimore Oriole.
Yeah.
Or I haven't read that one yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure we will. Yeah. There are so many great resources.
Yeah.
But to get baited, you got to start with the basics and start one little step at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Rhonda, this has been fun.
Mm-hmm.
And friends, we just really wanted to whet your taste buds, as we tend to do. And remember that this podcast, Field and Garden, is brought to you by thegardenersworkshop.com, which is what keeps us busy during the day. We have a fully stocked online garden shop, online library of courses, tons of free resources, our podcast you can hook up over there. We have a sister podcast called Seed Talk with Lisa and Lane. And, you know, friends, I hope you'll just check those out and keep in the know, get on our farm news. And we appreciate you dropping in. Bye, Rhonda.
Bye, Lisa.